last speaker, and then we'll go to some of your questions, is Greg Scanlon. Greg Scanlon, president of the Consumers for Healthcare Choices.
Well, thank you. I didn't expect this big a crowd today. This is pretty impressive. Obviously, these are burning issues for you. I stayed out at a hotel by the airport last night and took a cab in to come to the meeting this morning, and it was interesting, the criminal behavior that I saw on my way in. It was just shocking. There was a 55-mile-an-hour speed limit, and my taxi was going 65, and it was one of the slowest cars on the road. You know, it was just amazing. People were whizzing right by. And I know New York got a lot of attention not too long ago when you banned the use of handheld cell phones in cars, people driving. You'd just be amazed at how many criminals are out there. Because I was in the back seat of the cab, I could watch the other drivers, and I'd say 20% of them at least were using handheld cell phones. It's interesting how often we can pass public policy that makes absolutely no difference whatsoever. I would encourage the state legislatures to pass resolutions, suggestions for improved behavior, rather than passing laws. I mean, to some of us, a law is something that has to be obeyed. You know, but apparently most people don't feel that way. In my own state of Maryland, we got a whole lot of attention for passing the Walmart bill. Mandatory coverage for, actually required Walmart to pay at least 10% of payroll on health insurance or health benefits for its employees. Walmart actually was already paying 8.5%, so it had 10,000 employees. So we got all this apparently international attention. I know some of the people that were advocates of this quite well, and they were getting calls from reporters in Europe, and they felt really good about it. But at its best, it would have required Walmart to go up from 8.5% of payroll to 10% of payroll for 10,000 people. And is that really like a big breakthrough, you think? It didn't seem that way to me. Adding a 1.5% of payroll to health benefits for 10,000 people in the state of Maryland. And besides, it was blatantly a violation of ERISA. I mean, that was obvious from the very first. So it wasn't remotely surprising when it got overruled. But it distresses me that legislatures spend so much time on this stuff, on this feel-good stuff that makes absolutely no difference whatsoever. New York could easily get headlines for passing a universal health care bill, and I mean, just pass a bill saying we shall have universal health care, and everyone will call you up and say, "Gee, that's pretty cool," and it won't make any difference at all, and that's all right. I generally take a different look at things, and that's kind of what I'm going to do here. I part company from some of the earlier speakers. I'm not a big fan of managed care. I mean, managed care is fine. I mean, people should be feel free to choose it if they would like to. But I don't think it solves a whole lot of problems and creates even more problems than it solves. The essential problem in healthcare, in my view, has never been fee-for-service medicine, and that was always the argument for managed care, that fee-for-service healthcare is inherently inflationary. But when you think about it, most of what we do in the course of our lives is done on a fee-for-service basis. You know, I mean, if you go get a haircut or you hire a babysitter or you get your oil changed, you pay a fee and get a service. And none of it is particularly inflationary, because you would prefer not to pay more than you should pay for that. And if someone wants to overcharge you, you'll go somewhere else. The thing that is unique about healthcare is not fee-for-service. It is third-party payment. And it is third-party payment that is inflationary in healthcare. Third-party payment. And managed care actually increased the role of third-party payment. So managed care was not helpful as far as that goes. Managed care was pretty good at rationing care, not as good as European single payer systems and that sort of thing. But for a private entity, it was pretty good at rationing. People didn't care for that very much at all, and hence we had a managed care backlash with a lot of unhappy patients. And you got to keep the patients happy in a healthcare reform. Otherwise, what's the point of doing it? So these discontented patients started beating on the doors of legislators and regulators, asking for relief from the restrictions of managed care. So we got the Patient Bill of Rights, and we got mandated benefits, and we got any willing provider, and we got one thing after another. Legislatures and regulators trying to prevent these managed care programs that were doing a pretty good job of constricting cost increases from being mean to patients, and the whole thing just didn't work because of this level of discontent. Now, got to hit that hard. Now, over the years, we have increased the role of third-party payment, both public and private, dramatically. In fact, in 1960, about 56% of all healthcare spending in the United States was paid for directly by consumers out of their own pocket, 56%. Over time, that has dropped to the point where, on this slide, in the year 2000, it was down to 15%. And 2 years later, 2002, it was down to, how did I do that? It was down to 14%. Now, obviously, Medicare and Medicaid came along, and that infused a whole lot of public money into it. But it wasn't just Medicare and Medicaid; it was also the growth in widespread availability of private third-party payment and more generous benefits and that sort of thing. But the idea is that today, people are paying 14 cents on the dollar for healthcare. And if you pay 14 cents on the dollar for anything, you're going to consume a whole lot of it. So the question then becomes, how do you prevent those people from consuming all this cheap stuff? And once again, you get to the managed care paradigm where you're controlling their access to services that they feel they need. In some cases, they feel they need to preserve their lives or to ease the pain of their dependence. And people don't like that. People get awfully angry. So my contention is there are other ways of doing this. Now, over the years, this is from a Health Affairs article by Bob Blendon. Surveys have been done asking the American people, does the U.S. spend too much, too little, or just about the right amount on health care? Now, it's amazingly consistent. Since 1973, approximately two-thirds of the population has consistently said, we don't spend enough on healthcare. We ought to be spending more on healthcare. At no time in 30 years has more than 10% of the population ever said, we're spending too much, we need to cut back. Now, those of you that are in public policy are concerned about healthcare costs, and you want to lower the rate of increase of healthcare costs because it's a big crisis and it's hurting the taxpayers and it's wasting lots of resources. The American people don't see it. They don't see it at all. They don't have a clue. They think we ought to be spending more on healthcare. So it's awfully hard for a politician to get up and successfully run for office on a platform of healthcare cost containment. We're going to lower healthcare costs. The people don't want that. They want more spent on healthcare because they don't have a clue how much we're spending. And it's not just in the States, by the way. Bob Blendon, this is also from Health Affairs, most of this stuff is. Bob Blendon and some colleagues have surveyed the populations of five English-speaking countries, asking them, looking at your own healthcare system, how much change do you think is needed? Our own system is pretty good. It only needs minor change. It needs fundamental change, or it needs to be completely rebuilt. Now, these countries are New Zealand, Australia, the U.S., Canada, and the U.K., and they all seem to have pretty different financing systems. I mean, the U.K.'s National Health Service, Canada, Dr. Gretzer will tell us about in some detail, single-payer system. Australia and New Zealand are kind of mixes. And yet, In all five countries, roughly 20% of the population says our own system's pretty good, it only needs minor change. In all five countries, 80% of the population says our system needs to be fundamentally changed or completely rebuilt from scratch. 80%. My contention is that all five countries are essentially the same. They all rely on third-party payment to finance healthcare. In all five countries, the people have been promised all the healthcare you want for free. And it simply isn't true. You don't get all the health care you want for free. Now, when I'm talking about, oh, I'm sorry. I tried to get slick with these slides once and, okay. When I'm talking about third-party payment, I mean something specific. This is not simply someone else paying the bill. This is where the consumer pays a premium to an insurance company that pays the provider to deliver a service to the consumer. It's a triangular relationship. And like most triangular relationships in human affairs, it doesn't work very well. because no one knows what the other two people are doing. The consumer doesn't know what the relationship is between the insurance company and the doctor or the hospital. And in fact, he's pretty concerned about that. I mean, when you're sitting half naked on the examining room table of your doctor's office and he walks through the door, you don't know who he's working for. Is he working for you or is he working for the insurance company? You're not paying him any money. The insurance company's paying him. Who do you think he's working for? Is he really working in your best interests or not? Just that you have to ask the question, just that you wonder that, is a tragedy in America. Now, the doctor doesn't know what the relationship is between the consumer and the insurer. He's not really clear on what the obligation is between you and your insurance company, and he shouldn't be. It's not his concern. He ought to keep his mind out of that. He ought to be working on health care. And the insurance company has gotten way too interested in what's happening between the provider and the consumer, to the point that they've become these peeping toms looking into one of the most intimate relationships of our lives. The insurance companies are trying to control that. And that violates the trust that you have with your doctor. You know, there's a lot of lip service given to restoring the patient-physician relationship. It's not just a throwaway line. It is essential. That is the essential moment in healthcare, the meeting between the patient and the doctor. And we have destroyed that over the years in America. Now, here's a different paradigm. This puts the consumer in the middle. One of our slogans for our organization is putting the consumer in the driver's seat of the healthcare system. Now, contracts are always or should be two-party arrangements. You know, I agree to perform a service, and you agree to pay me a fee. It's a direct relationship. A consumer-driven world puts the consumer in the middle of this relationship. The employer pays the consumer money for work performed. The consumer takes that money, pays a premium to the insurance company who delivers a benefit. The consumer takes that benefit and pays the doctor to provide a healthcare service. A series of two-party contracts where the responsibility is very clear. I'm going to skip this. Okay. What's going on now, and this is still just a tiny, tiny, tiny little blip on the radar screen, is consumer-driven healthcare, which includes such programs as health savings accounts, health reimbursement arrangements, defined contribution on the part of employers. It is trying to put money in the hands of the consumer so they can make more of their own healthcare decisions. If you don't have the money in your hand, you don't have any power. You don't have any power. Once the consumer gets money in their hand, then they start demanding information to help them figure out how to spend that money. Once they get information and money both, then they start making demands on how healthcare services are provided. So instead of the bureaucratic, inefficient, wasteful, poor quality system that we have today, we start to develop, like we have in every other part of our economy, a system that is responsive, convenient, efficient, accountable, and of very high quality. That's what consumer-driven healthcare is all about. And we can talk during the Q&A session about the details of that, exactly how it's playing out. But that's the essential vision of this new paradigm of healthcare reform. Thank you very much.